Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
And thank you for being here on this chilly afternoon. Especially for me, coming from California. I don't know about the natives. Maybe it's a treat, huh? Okay, so I'm going to get started. And I, Thelma Gamboa Maldonado, have no personal financial relationships to disclose. So let me give you a little bit of background about our preparedness center. Back in 2009, UCLA and Loma Linda University Schools of Public Health received a multi-million dollar grant to establish what is known as a Preparedness and Emergency Response Research Center. Now, there are 9 such centers across the United States, and we have a joint center. And the goal of these centers is to facilitate research to strengthen the ability of public health systems at all levels to prepare for, respond, and recover from natural and human-generated disasters. Now, today I'm going to provide you just a snapshot of the project that we've been working on for about 2 years now at Loma Linda. It's pretty intense project, so 20 minutes is not even close to enough to provide you all the details, but a snapshot is what I'm providing. And we are using community-based participatory research as an approach to build capacity for environmental emergency preparedness and disaster resilience. As you are aware, emergencies and disasters have the potential to negatively affect environmental health services and the health and safety of communities that are affected. And usually it's the essential services and the essential threads of life that are threatened: food, water, shelter, sanitation, and hygiene. And it is for this reason that our team of researchers proposed that a partnership be fostered between 3 different entities. Number one, the environmental public health professionals of local health agencies. Number 2, the emergency preparedness and response professionals of local health agencies. And number 3, the communities that they serve. There is a great push to build community resilience, especially after seeing post-disaster events. And resilient communities and social systems should be able to absorb the shocks and rebuild so that the community remains on the same or improved functioning state. And I put a coil here because I like to think of resilience as being that coil. And when there is a disaster or an emergency, the community or that coil oscillates back and forth. And the time that it takes for it to come back to its resting state or an improved resting state is a sign of resilience. Those that bounce back faster are more resilient. However, not all communities have this built-in resilience. Some communities are less resilient for various reasons. Perhaps they have a lower social economic status or lower income or resources. Some may be politically, culturally, or language isolated. All of these social vulnerabilities lead to increased risk. And studies show that the ethnically and racially diverse groups are the ones to have most negative incomes impacts after disaster events. Other vulnerabilities include lower perceived personal risk from emergencies, distrust of warning messengers, lack of preparation and protective action, and reliance on informal sources of information. So in our study, we want to determine which approach works best. Traditionally in public health, we work with the expert-driven or top-down approach, where the public health system has the resources and the knowledge, and we hope that with working through partners, community-based organizations and such, that this information and knowledge will trickle down to community members themselves. So we are comparing that approach to a community-based participatory partnership approach, in which all of these entities, the public health system, the community organizations, and the community members themselves, come together to a roundtable, for instance, and all bring their expertise, their knowledge, and they share equal, and each of their resources are seen as equal. And they come up with solutions together. And this is the approach that we hope is going to work best. So in our study, our goal is to investigate the benefits and challenges of using community-based participatory research to foster these partnerships and to connect individuals to existing public health services. Just a quick overview of the aims of CBPR. With CBPR, we hope to increase the knowledge and understanding of a given phenomenon. Then we use this understanding and integrate it into creative interventions, which we hope will lead to policy and social change. And in the long term, our goal is to improve the health and quality of life of community members, thereby decreasing health inequities and inequalities. Our study focuses in the area of the Inland Empire of Southern California, and this region of California is composed of two counties. One is San Bernardino County in the north, and in the south of this area is Riverside County. This area has been known to many and has been called California's the Third California. And the reason for that is because a lot of social indicators and income indicators indicate that it's a resource-deficient area. This area, unfortunately, has one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation. It also has some of the lowest educational achievements and educational level for residents in the nation. And in spite of all of this, it's also one of the regions of the nation that receives the lowest per capita amount of funding for its residents. So this region here is exactly where Loma Linda University is located, in the heart of the Inland Empire. And we think we're in a special location here because we serve as an anchor institution where we learn about the emerging science, in this case, emergency preparedness, and we create interventions to translate that emerging science into something that's useful for the communities and that will help them. This study is guided by a quasi-experimental mixed methods approach. And in our intervention group, we have the Riverside County Public Health System, in particular, the Environmental Health and Emergency Preparedness and Response Programs. So the innovation and interventions that we create will be for them in specific. And the San Bernardino County workforce, their counterparts in the other county, will receive some information, and they are the control group. We are working with the Center for Community Action and Environmental Justice, our community partner in this area, and this organization works with residents of both counties. So why use community-based participatory research? One of the reasons why we chose to use this methodology is because after post-disaster events such as Hurricane Katrina, it was noted that the top-down or professional-only approaches were ineffective in helping communities bounce back from the disasters. And also, this approach is in line with the public health performance standards, or the 10 essential services. And in particular, essential service number 4 helps public health systems to guide them in helping to mobilize community participation. And so this framework goes in line with that, and we hope to see how it can help other systems, once we're done with our study, how it can help other systems throughout the nation to achieve that. Oops. So I'm going to walk you through the phases of CBPR. And the first phase is partnership formation and maintenance. And this is important because it helps to develop a collaborative and equitable association. It helps to build capacity and co-learning among all partners. And it helps to establish the long-term process and commitment to the program. So in strengthening our partnerships with the local public health system, our university hosted and facilitated what is known as the EDR training, or Environmental Health Training for Emergency Response. This was provided to the workforce, the environmental health and emergency preparedness and response workforce of both counties. And pretty much this gives the professionals a baseline understanding of what is required of them in terms of environmental health emergency response. The training also provides some level of guidance in how to work with communities, especially after a disaster event. Over 200 participants were in attendance, and those who are registered environmental health specialists received continuing education credit. CCAEJ, or the Center for Community Action and Environmental Justice, is our community partner. And we chose to partner with them because they have a long history of working with environmental health issues, and they fight for environmental justice. Just to give you an idea of where CCAEJ is located, they're about 60 miles inland of the Los Angeles port cities. And community members have homes adjacent to some of the largest rail yards in the nation. So as you can see, or as you can imagine, they deal a lot with environmental health issues such as high air pollution. There's also noise pollution, not only from the local traffic, but also from the trains passing by by their homes. In addition to that, they live near warehouses, as many warehouses you can imagine are next to rail yards, and they don't know what's stored in those warehouses. There have been incidences where there have been chemical spills inside those warehouses, and some of it trickled into the community, and they didn't know anything about it. All they knew is that the surrounding freeway was closed, the surrounding streets were closed, even their neighborhood was closed, but they still didn't know what was going on. No one came to inform them. So when they learned about our project and preparing for emergencies of all kinds, they were very excited, and it went along with the mission of their organization. In phase two, community assessment and diagnosis, we assess the needs, the strengths, the assets, and the facilitators of community-based participatory research, and also of looking for solutions to some of the community's problems. And in doing so, we use triangulation. And in triangulation, you look at an issue from at least three different perspectives. And for our study, we conducted key informant interviews with public health professionals from environmental health and emergency preparedness and response. And with the community, we conducted key informant interviews with key stakeholders and also with community members themselves. We also conducted focus groups, and we did a couple of windshield surveys. And we wanted to see what everyone's perspective was and to see if they had a common ground. I'd like to share with you now some of the results of our qualitative study. And from the workforce perspective, limited funding streams is a major, major obstacle. And this professional said, "Our funding comes specifically from the regulated industry, and it wouldn't be right to use those monies for something that is not related to that facility that we are regulating." Another sentiment from the professionals is that the funding streams are specific for specific projects, and so they really can't use the funding for what was called special projects, which is engaging with the community. Lack of interdepartmental collaboration. This professional stated that as far as working a lot with environmental health, I haven't seen that happen too much yet in our program. I know we work a lot with various partners in the hospitals and with law enforcement. So that's another barrier that within public health we're seeing, and we hope to bridge that gap as a result of our work. Language or technical jargon is another barrier. As I mentioned, the Inland Empire is a very racially diverse group of people, and most of them identify themselves as Latino. So many speak Spanish either as their first language or they are bilingual. And unfortunately, the public health workforce doesn't mirror the population that they serve. And so language can be a major barrier. In addition to language and its spoken language, it's the technical jargon is also another barrier that prevents or can impede community engagement. This professional said, "When you're talking about germ theory or anything else that can go with that, it will be important to make it appropriate for the audience." So they are aware that these barriers exist, and they are trying to do something to be able to communicate with the community. Perceived lack of community trust in government entities was also another barrier that was identified. This professional stated that they're naturally suspicious sometimes of strangers trying to provide them help. The community also identified some barriers to preparedness, and they also have financial strains and time constraints. This member stated they often don't have money, this is community members, don't often have money to pay the rent, to pay bills, to feed the children and themselves at the end of the month. That's when they take and use the emergency supplies. So maybe they do engage in some sort of emergency preparedness, but when rough times come around, they will go to their stores and use up their supplies. They also mirrored what the public health workforce mentioned about lack of trust in local officials and agencies responsible for preparing communities. And this member said that they rather struggle than do what they can on their own than ask government for assistance because they're fearful of them. Lack of information is another barrier that community members identified. This member stated that public health is doing some really good work, but it's not out in the community for everybody. So if something happens, there is a group of people that wouldn't have the slightest idea of what's available for them. And finally, another barrier to preparedness is the limited firsthand experience, which leads to low motivation on behalf of the community members to prepare. This member stated that because they have never experienced an emergency, they can hear an announcement of getting prepared or getting ready, but it doesn't motivate them to get prepared. So even though we hear always about the great California big one coming soon, it still is not really a motivator for some of them because they haven't experienced any major disaster. So even though we did find barriers, we also discovered that there are facilitators to community engagement. And existing partnerships is one facilitator. So although the public health professionals that we identified may not work amongst themselves or amongst departments, they do share certain key community stakeholders. For instance, both of these departments do work with local law enforcement, local fire departments, local emergency managers, the hospital system, and they're starting to work more so with schools and faith-based organizations. So that can be a strength that we can build on. And also the public health workforce is motivated and willing to work with community members. This professional stated, "My commitment is to protect public health, because when somebody needs help, you help that person, regardless of what your role is. So I'm committed and I am ready." The public health professionals and the community identified some best practices, and one theme that emerged was that one size does not fit all. And something that I hear a lot on our campus is that the one-size-fit-all mentality of public health is extinct. Now we know it doesn't work. We have to really cater to the community that we're working with in order to have the best progress. And it was suggested that simple, inexpensive, and customized preparedness techniques are best because of their increased accessibility and greater likelihood for success. Another best practice was a community-focused partnerships. So even though they did not know the term CBPR or the methods of CBPR, the professionals in the community knew that it was a good idea for everyone involved to get together and together look for solutions to problems, to plan, create, and implement outreach. And I like what this environmental health professional said. We can't just go out there and spout orders and say it's because the code says so. There has to be a participatory process and an mutual understanding to why the code says that. Another best practice was to work with lay community health workers, also known as promotores, as this is an effective and culturally sensitive approach to engage with communities. And this community member stated, "The promoting is what actually works out here because, I mean, they have no other means of getting informed. So we have to go out there and let them know." And because CCAEJ, our community partner, has a network of promoters or promotores, that was one of the reasons, what one of the major reasons we decided to partner with them, because we also know that that's effective. In phase three, or defining the issues, we did a quantitative study in which we distributed a survey to the workforce and a survey to the community. For the workforce, we wanted to learn, are you ready to change your traditional top-down approach individually and as a group to one that is more community-focused? The survey results indicate that management support and self-efficacy to perform emergency competencies are significant predictors of readiness for change. And the survey also indicated that a high sense of confidence in ability, willingness, and motivation is found in the workforce. In the community survey, it was the promotores from CCAEJ were trained to go and conduct face-to-face interviews with 300 households in the Inland Empire. And I'm just going to provide a few data. I just wanted to show that about 72% of the participants felt that they were able to handle a natural disaster if they planned and prepared beforehand. And 63% felt that planning and preparing was good to handle a hazardous materials accident, which is one of their major threats in the area. When asked about their stage of preparedness, this is where we see some need. And only 30% said they have, 13% said that they've been preparing over the past months. 7% feel that they are prepared. The other ones are still not sure if they are going to prepare or in the process of thinking about preparing. So this is where our interventions will come in. Document and evaluate partnership process and feedback are constant phases of CBPR. So we're going to come to the last phase, or capacity building, and this is where we're going to take the information we learned from the qualitative and the quantitative study to create a CBPR curriculum for the environmental health workforce. And for the community, this curriculum has already been created, and it is a 5-module emergency preparedness specifically tailored for community members. And right now we're in the process of training community promotores to then go and train community members. So it's a train-the-trainer model that we're using. These are just some pictures of the community preparedness fairs that we've organized, where all three of our partners are: the community members, the community organizations, and the environmental health workforce. And in conclusion, true collaboration is key. There is need for learning on all sides from the public health workforce. We need to learn to effectively reach and engage communities with respect and sensitivity. And from the community, openness to engaging with public health professionals is key to realistic and sustainable preparedness. That's my presentation. Okay.